Hi, I'm Tyra G, your host of Frankly Speaking with Tyra G. Welcome again to our virtual global gathering of phenomenal listeners. I'm talking about you, fearsome and generous, humble and honest, in pursuit of new possibilities and purpose. Every week, we meet right here at the table for an hour to experience, educate, encourage, and empower each other through our joys and lessons learned. We share some topics that tradition tells us there's some things that we just don't talk about. But not here. Here we live beyond both the judgment and the wreckage. We share some aha moments and stories that have been left in our pockets for too long. Every week we start right where we are. Although many of your voices will be speaking light into darkness, there is no insignificant person around this table. However, you must come dressed in your inner awesome, believing that impossible is merely a word. You're listening to Radio Fairfax, Fairfax, Virginia, on your TV, computer, or mobile device, and we are webcast worldwide on the internet at www.radiofairfax.org every Saturday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Now, should you miss us, no worries. We can be heard on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And those of you who like to send me those love notes, you may continue to do that. Email me at tyra@tyragarlington.com. Thank you so much for tuning in. And thank you, Courtney Nero, for composing and performing our Frankly Speaking theme song and for naming it I'm Listening. You know, over the past 3 years, storytelling on Frankly Speaking with Tyra G has been intentionally thematic across generations and cultures and genre. But you know, this pandemic came and stuff started to change. I found that I was sitting and focusing about grieving of the loss of power over my movements, my expectations, my finances, my future, my everything. I was even wondering if I would ever retrieve my peace. I often feel physical, mental, and emotional uncertainty and unrest. It seems like everything that can be shaken is shaking. Where noise, angry noise, seems to be drowning out laughter and love. I have actually had to intentionally do some self-talk, reminding me the truth is what's happening to me is quite separate and distinct from the person that I am. I've had to hold on to the power of a thought because I know thoughts can link to new possibilities just as they can limit outcomes. Well, during this season of uncertainty, Frankly Speaking with Tyra G is emphasizing stories that focus on things that can positively impact. In doing so, I believe we'll find harmony, vulnerability, and authenticity that will help us rise above that noise. Our stories will expose, explore, and empower positive and potential solutions that we can take and make together toward building a healthier, more inclusive nation. We're learning from and paying tribute to servant leaders, game changers, entrepreneurs, innovative organizations, all planters of seeds that yield valuable harvest. All who live their lives in spite of, rather than because of. All who bring light into darkness. These leaders and organizations choose service as a method of healing both self and the nation. These stories will become chapters in the Book of Enlightenment that we write together. To create a common thought space, I will echo some words about service from best-selling author and acclaimed life coach Iyana Van Sant in her book published in 2000 called Until Today. And I quote, "The greatest service I can offer is willingness to do things in a new way. Some of us are given the awesome task of breaking out of family patterns of poverty, pain, suffering, ignorance, and fear. Some of us come into life for the sheer purpose of guiding our family into a new way of thinking, living, and being. For this reason, your family may think you're a little weird or different. They may accuse you of doing things that are not right. They may even tell you that what you're doing is wrong. You may feel that what you're doing is wrong. Besides, if everyone is content going right, who are you to go left? If everyone in your immediate family has made it through life in a cold water flat, who are you to want a townhouse? Should you find yourself in this predicament, stop. Stop trying to convince. Show them. Well, we're living in a new age, a new time where things must be different. We cannot continue to do what has always been done. Something or someone must change. It might as well be you. You have the vision. You have the opportunity. The only thing you need is strength and courage to recognize that you've been chosen for the awesome task of implementing change. If you follow your own guidance, your progress will be the only evidence you need. Your life will provide a new direction for generations that will follow you. Your job is to bring about change in a loving, gentle, and harmonious way. You may have to leave some people behind. Should that be the case, bless them and keep on moving. Because until today, you have been so loyal to your family patterns that you would not step beyond what you've been taught to believe. But just for today, dare to be different. Dare to introduce a new way of being. Dare to climb out of the family tree." End quote. Now, these words sounded like both a challenge and a call to action to me. And I'm delighted that our show today features two stories that answered the call to action. These stories are separated by time, but joined in legacy. Both stories begin with a thought, a dream, followed by commitment and personal empowerment. Now, to get to the first story, I need you to time travel with me in your imagination to February 23rd, 1905. We are walking around in downtown Chicago, Illinois. And it was just 2 years earlier, in 1903, that the Wright brothers flew an airplane under its own power. Theodore Roosevelt was president. The very first pizzeria had just opened in New York City, and the first U.S. subway system had also opened in New York City. Henry Ford had just broken a land speed record in his race car on a frozen Lake St. Clair near Detroit at 91 miles per hour. The words smog and depression became official in the dictionary. In the years before television, radio, movies, and social media, people entertained themselves by joining clubs. But these clubs were organized for very narrow, special interests and were very often exclusive. They were political or social or religious. Now I want you to imagine a 37-year-old attorney born and raised in quiet New England by his grandparents. Paul Harris is single, conservative, and shy. Finally, after 9 years, he has a steady income stream from his law practice. He eats out alone most nights, uncomfortably tolerating the commercial exploitation, social unrest, political corruption, and religious fundamentalism that surrounded him. We don't have to time travel too far to imagine that, do we? However, on February 23rd, in 1905, in room 711 of the Unity Building on 127 Dearborn Street, Paul Harris and three of his acquaintances, Sylvester and Gus and Hiram, who were also discontented with social environment, they decided to become game changers. They didn't call them game changers in 1905, but that's who they were. They were looking for a place, an organization where they could have friendship and fellowship, kind of a booster club, where they could talk about and encourage one another, and even to practice volunteerism. They wanted it to be inclusive instead of exclusive. Well, imagine now we're in Gus's office. It's a very modest office. Three or four uncomfortable chairs, one desk, one engineering chart on the wall, and one coat rack. All three men dressed in their creative courage and commitment, enough to become planters of seeds that would yield a worldwide organization over 115 years, where today, 1.2 million members, people of action, an army of apolitical, multicultural soldiers committed to service above self, stand up. The boys named the seed they planted Rotary. Full disclosure, I first became a member of Rotary 11 years ago. And as I learned more about Rotary, I thought, gee, this is the best kept secret in the whole philanthropic world. Whenever I shared my amazement and all my joy about all that Rotary does, my friends were going, so what's a Rotary? And I was like, I had to tell the story that I didn't feel the impact of what it meant to be a Rotarian until I attended my first Rotary International Convention in Bangkok, Thailand. There were 35,000 other folks wearing smiles and the round Rotary wheel pin. It was unbelievable. There were no strangers, only members who believed that they had a shared responsibility to act on the world's most persistent issues. Our 35,000 clubs work together to do just that. Rotary promotes peace, fights disease, provides clean water, sanitation, and hygiene, saves mothers and children, supports education, and grows local economies all over the world. So I got my peeps' attention as I described it, but I think what they really caught was my enthusiasm. And that's what we want to share in these stories, how important and how contagious it can be to be a part of an organization that has this culture. Well, my guest storyteller for today is the District 7610 governor, one of 535 districts around the world, Mr. Harry Henderson. Now, as Harry, one of our Human Library books, introduces himself, he's going to unpack what that title is I just gave him, what it means, and his journey to Rotary. We all didn't start out in Rotary. It was a journey. And other things like the scope of his leadership and so much more. So, Harry, welcome to the table.
Thank you, Tyra. It's a pleasure to be here, and thank you so much for having me.
You bet. you're on. Excite these people, excite these listeners about Rotary and Harry.
Well, Harry has done a lot of growing, I think, over the last number of years since I joined Rotary. But I would tell you that the beautiful part of Rotary is something you encompassed with what you just talked about, which is it's a brotherhood and a sisterhood.
Mm-hmm.
It is truly a fraternal organization. There's a great past district governor in my district who is a member of my club by the name of Jack Kenyon, and he used to say, if you start with the fellowship, the service will follow.
Mm.
And it's such a powerful statement, and it's so true. My club members and my district and my fellow Rotarians are all my brothers and my sisters. They have been with me in every tough time of my life, every difficult decision, every difficult experience, joys, pains, challenges, triumphs. And I can tell you that I was just this past weekend talking on the phone, basically watching a English soccer match with a good friend of mine down in Naples, Florida, who I met through Rotary.
Mm-hmm.
And the two of us were cheering during the game as we were watching this. And I thought to myself, where else but through Rotary? To two people. He comes originally from England, from Sheffield in England.
Uh-huh.
I come from Greensburg, Pennsylvania. The two of us were brought together through Rotary, and we have become such amazing friends. And I think about what it means to be a Rotarian,
mm-hmm.
and that's what it means to be a Rotarian. It means an ability to work with one another to find solutions to the problems that vex society. And that's the best part of what Rotary is all about. And so to me, what is Rotary? Rotary is where friends come together to discuss ideas, find solutions, and make a better community for all of us to live in, and ultimately a better world.
And you know, Harry, as I'm listening to you, both of us kind of talk tonight about walking into Rotary as adults. But where did you get your service DNA? What made you want to even find an organization like Rotary? Who were the heroes and sheroes in your life that said service is a good thing?
You know, my father was a crucial part of my life.
Mm-hmm.
We always talk about how, you know, we all have that unpaid life coach.
Yes.
That brings us from immaturity to maturity.
Uh-huh.
And provides us with life lessons along the way, encouragement, sometimes discouragement, but always there when you absolutely needed him. And that was my father. My father was a joiner. He was a part of every organization in Greensburg, Pennsylvania. And I can tell you, it was the Shriners, it was the Lions, it was the Elks, it was the Moose. I mean, I cannot tell you the number of events that I've gone to over the years at, you know, that are different banquet dinners and things like that, that my father brought me to. But he also taught me that it was important to give something back.
Mm.
My father used to play Santa for kids in the local community that didn't have very much.
Mm-hmm.
And he would sit there and he would play Santa, and he would personally go and purchase stockings for these kids to have so they would have something at Christmas time. And, you know, I didn't know it at the time, but he was sowing in me the seeds of why it's important to give something back to the local community, why it's important to be engaged with your local community.
Mm.
He was the example for me that I wanted to be. And whenever I came to Washington, D.C., You know, I went to college at George Washington University. I worked on Capitol Hill. I left Capitol Hill and started, you know, working in a big firm, and I just didn't like it, and so I started my own firm. And I remember it was the birth of my daughter, a special needs child, that we did not think there was any problems during the pregnancy until she came, and we had a challenge at that point. It was not the journey that we were expecting. And I fell into a very deep depression. And I can tell you that I was angry at a lot of the world for what I saw as just not the way it needed to be or the way it was supposed to be. And there was a woman by the name of Juanita Ballinger, who is a member of my club, who said, "You need to come to my Rotary Club." And when I went to that club, it was one of the best experiences I've ever had. I remember the speaker talked about the importance of eradicating polio worldwide, and talked about the importance of these types of programs that Rotary was engaged in. But it was the conversations I had. I remember the people that sat with me, gentleman by the name of Burns Even, Bill Bailey, who has since passed away, and Lloyd Stossel, all sat at my table. And I swear to you, Tyra, I never got to eat my breakfast that day because they wanted to know everything about me. And they talked to me and they engaged me and they were interested in me and they wanted to know what it was that was of interest to me and to my family. And when the meeting was over, I remember Juanita said to me, "Did you like it?" And I said, "Yeah, I loved it. It was fantastic." And she said, "Great, come back next weekend on Friday. You're my guest again." And I did that, and I kind of went around. And by about the fourth or fifth time that I came, I remember Ben Hester, a member of my club, put his hand on my shoulder, and he said, "Okay, we know you're going to be a Rotarian. The only question is, are you going to be a Rotarian in this club or a different club?" And he said, "It's time for you to start to think about that solution." And I went to an event that my club put on. And it was to hand out meals at Thanksgiving. And we were bringing around Interact kids that are from our local high school. And they would help us take a box of food to a family so they would be able to have Thanksgiving meals at we always delivered it on the Saturday before Thanksgiving. And we got the information from the local high school for the kids, or the local elementary school for the kids that were on meal assistance needs. And when we did, I remember knocking on the door, and a woman came to the door, and the kids gave the box to them. And I grew up in a very middle class family. You know, we weren't wealthy by any means, but we weren't poor either. And I remember looking inside and seeing that the only furniture that that family had was patio furniture, the plastic patio furniture that you would find at a Kmart or at a Target. And I thought to myself, Harry, these people need help. They need the help that your father told you that you needed to step up and provide if you could. And so that's how I came to Rotary, was that I decided right then and there I was going to be a Bailey's Crossroads Rotarian, and that I was going to engage and be involved with Rotary. And it has been a terrific journey for me, to the point that I've now become district governor, from being president of my club and being sergeant at arms of my club way back in the day. But it was that sense that my father gave to me of, you need to provide a hand to those that need it. Rotary's given me that opportunity.
And I heard a lot of things, and I'm sure we all did, but the things I want to emphasize is that Rotary is relationship-based. And generally, if you are invited and you go to that meeting, you are also embraced. And Harry said they wanted to know everything about me. Rotarians are curious. They want people of like mind. They want people not trying to build a resume, even though networking is a very positive part of an international organization, but they want people who are have servants' hearts. And
you know, I think that's important to say. It's interesting. My daughter goes to Key Center in Fairfax County Public Schools. She's at that school because a member of my club, Steve Hunt, who's a former school board member, said to me, Harry, your daughter would be perfect at that school. That school is built for the needs of your daughter. Yes. And he said, you need to pick up the phone and call this individual. Just talk to that individual to help you get your daughter to that school. And we go to Shriners Hospital in Philadelphia for some of my daughter's spinal issues that she has. And we were driving up and back, and a lot of people don't realize this. There is immense stress when you're going to a doctor's appointment for your child, especially as a special needs child. And so you're all stressed out, and then the appointment goes, and on the way back, you are literally exhausted. And you're driving back from Philadelphia, and you're exhausted. And a gentleman in my club by the name of Don Welland said to me, Harry, why are you driving to and from Philadelphia? And I said, well, I have to go to Shriners Hospital, Don. And he said to me, he goes, my local Masonic Lodge will take you and your wife and your daughter to Philadelphia. You just have to tell us when you need to go. And it was a service that they provided for it. I would have never known that if it wasn't for Rotary. That network of care is so prevalent within Rotary. And that's such an important part of who we are and what we do.
And I want to build on that. Actually, I want you to build on it, because way back in the 1930s, I think it might have been at our founders, Paul Harris's first or second international radio address, he made this comment, which I treasure and repeat often. He said, the world is a changing place. Rotary must change with it. And
that's right.
You as district governor, I know there's some things that you're trying to do that require change. And I want to know, would you walk into that quote and talk about some of the things you're trying to implement? And I should say some of the challenges Rotary and other organizations have as what we have four generations working in the workplace for the first time in the history of the United States. So that's four generations of people that we would like to pick from and have come to and with us. So, but it's not easy anymore.
It certainly isn't. And, you know, that's such a great quote by our founder. For Rotary to be successful, just like any organization to be successful, you have to change as society changes. As norms change, as what is an acceptable part of society changes. I sometimes tell people, you know, there's a great institution in the United States called American football. And, you know, on Sundays, it is something that millions of Americans find themselves in front of the television watching their favorite team, including me. I'm a diehard Pittsburgh Steelers fan. My wife is a diehard Indianapolis Colts fan. And the two of us, believe me, when our teams play each other, we separate into corners because, you know, we're both that rabid about it. But for years, the forward pass didn't exist in football. Well, today, that seems to be all most teams do, is throw the football. The players are bigger, they're stronger, they're faster than they've ever been before. Some of them play indoors. Some of them play on artificial turf. You know, they're playing in Las Vegas and Los Angeles and Arizona.
And internationally.
And internationally as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because as society changed, as what was seen as successful changed, football changed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's also some other issues to it. It used to be that if you were an African-American, you couldn't be a quarterback.
That's right.
In football.
That's right.
It was thought to be a position that was just beyond your capability.
That's right.
Well, Doug Williams changed that. And when Doug Williams won the Super Bowl, that changed.
Mm-hmm.
The same was true about the head coach position.
Yes.
It was seen to be a institution strictly that a white person had to be in. Well, there are countless great examples. My personal favorite is Tony Dungy.
I knew you were going to say that.
Who, I mean, he is just a phenomenal individual. Well, Rotary is the same way. Rotary cannot continue to operate the way that it did in the 1980s. Why? Because, well, society has changed. The way we work has changed. The way we live our lives have changed. You know, we communicate with each other using email, text messages, and apps of all sorts. We have literally more computer strength in our cell phones than they had on the first mission to the moon. And we have to, as an organization, change and alter the way we do business as an organization. And that's going to at times be very simple to do, and at other times it's going to be very painful to accomplish. And that's true of any organization, whether you're in business or you're providing service that's engaged and involved with people. Well, take Northern Virginia even as a great example. Northern Virginia is a minority-majority community.
Yes.
That was not the case even 20 years ago. You have a situation where our clubs are getting to a point where they are more reflective of their communities. This has been something that I have really pushed hard with our clubs. I've had conversations countless times with presidents, and I tell them, you need to have hard conversations with individuals in your community. And they're beginning to have those. And we're starting to see clubs connecting with their communities in ways that they have not seen in the past. We need to become a much more diverse organization.
Mm-hmm.
We need to grow with our communities and be reflective of our communities. We need more women in very strong, powerful positions.
Yes, we're going to talk about that.
And I will tell you, I have been one of the strongest proponents of this. I have been working so hard with our upcoming leadership individuals of Pat Borowski and Sheila Brennan, who are going to be fantastic. They are absolutely fabulous. But one of the things that I said early on was, we are going to have an equal number of men and women in key leadership positions in our district. And I had a lot of people that were saying originally to me, oh, Harry, you can't do that. You just select people that you can get along with. And I said, no, we need people in our organization to see that there is an ability for them to grow into leadership. And we need women in our organization to say, it's time for me to take up that cause and to grow Rotary in this direction. There's a lot of things that I want to get done. Some of them, we're getting there. I certainly think we have a much more community-centric effort underway. Some of them are going to be a little more challenging. I had hoped we could have raised a little bit more money, but I think both the economy and COVID have put a little bit of a damper onto that.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that we're doing, and that I'm so proud of the presidents of our clubs for doing, is they have embraced the world that they find themselves in.
Yes.
And that they are willing to say, this may not have been where we had intended to go, but it's where we are now, and we're going to go forward in this direction. And I'm so incredibly proud.
You know, Harry,
work that they're doing.
You know, like most of us are Zooming or on Ring Central for our meetings, or we're hybrid. And
right.
I was just thinking, maybe it was 3 weeks ago, we got an invitation from a Rotary Club in Malaysia to join them for a presentation on branding yourself on social media, specifically LinkedIn. So I signed up for it. My current president signed up for it. It was fascinating. And I'm thinking, you know, there's a rainbow in a lot of after a lot of storms, and even during the storms. So we've been able.
You know,
go ahead.
I would tell you, in the special needs community, we have a story that we tell.
Okay.
I think it's an important story. We talk about how you get onto a plane.
Oh, I have that.
You are going to Paris.
And you wind up in Holland.
And
yes.
And you wind up in Holland.
Yes.
And I will tell you, it is so incredibly true.
I want you to advertise that, because I actually spent a year studying special needs and how they age out of the systems that support them in education. And that was about 10 years ago, the first time I ever heard that story. And it's impactful.
It's so powerful.
And it's so powerful. Only I can't remember the name of the woman that wrote it. But it's...
I can't either, but that's...
It's Welcome to Holland is the name of it, if you have.
Yes.
I actually did a blog on it last year. If you have a special needs child, it's called Welcome to Holland, and it will warm your heart. And Harry,
it absolutely does.
What one thing, I don't want to get too far away from what you were talking about in terms of diversity and how we're looking to grow our clubs in that direction. There's something that we don't talk about often. You know, we talk about service above self. We serve. But in order to serve a diverse community, you have to be culturally competent. And Harry talked about giving out meals at Thanksgiving in his particular community. They're not all white Christians. They have multicultures and multi-religions. So when you're packing a meal for Thanksgiving, it may look different for some of the people that you're serving. And one of the things, I was president of my club last year, and we start looking at cultural competence of giving. And how, when you said your thing is to get to know your community, that's what makes us effective. And that's what keeps, this is me talking now, I believe that's what keeps our stories going and growing. To know.
It's so true.
Yeah.
It is so true. Because, and I really want to spend just a minute on this, but one of the things that I had a great conversation with a nonprofit that's doing tremendous work in Mason District area, Fairfax County.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to this group, I said, you know, what I think you need is this. And the person laughed.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, that's not what we need. We don't need any of those things. Let me tell you what we need. We need people that are going to be able to help our families understand how to fill out a financial aid form.
Yes.
For a child going to college.
Mm-hmm.
We need somebody that's going to help our individual people understand that you can go to a credit union or a bank and get a car loan, and that you don't have to go to just some guy that has money to loan it to you personally. We need you to help us understand how to become homeowners and business owners and how to build our organizations so that we can be sustaining ourselves rather than looking for help, and that we can develop next generation success stories that are coming.
Yes. And let me reintroduce
you. He said you have to leave your preconceived notions at the door.
Yes.
And find out what it is that community needs. And that's what our clubs are starting to do. And that's so terrific.
And I wanted to reintroduce the fact that I'm having a conversation with Harry Henderson, who is the current Rotary District Governor of District 7610. Your words were so powerful. If people are just tuning in, we're talking about serving. We're talking about serving beyond obligations. We're talking about reaching out to the world. And once you begin to see the impact of what it means to dig clean wells in Zambia so people can have clean water, what it means then for girls to be able to go to school because they can have private bathrooms, what it means to get to the point, 1985, Harry, we started dealing with polio, and now we're down to two countries. And that, Harry, talk about that as a collaboration. What Rotary does to get it done, who are we working with?
I have to tell you, this is one of the greatest success stories that our planet has ever seen. We're on the cusp of eradicating a debilitating disease.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about that for a minute. Eradication off the face of the earth. Mm-hmm. Something that has so rarely been done that it's almost viewed as too large a goal to be achieved. This year, we have been able to certify that Africa is polio-free.
Yes.
Yeah. I want to just sort of think about that for a minute. The continent of Africa is polio-free.
Yes.
It doesn't exist anymore. Now, I tell this to clubs when I visit with them all the time. That didn't happen by accident.
Correct.
That didn't happen just because people wrote checks. It happened because great minds came together and said, how can we accomplish this monumental, enormous task? And you had people that said, you know what? I can give some money. You had some other people that said, I can give some of my time.
Mm-hmm.
And would go on things like National Immunization Day trips.
Mm-hmm.
And things like that, and would travel to India and to other places around this globe to provide immunization for children from this debilitating disease. You had other people that said, you know who I think would be really helpful for us would be the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
We need to talk to them about this and present it to them just as I just did, which is we want to eradicate this off the face of the earth. And the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation have provided literally billions of dollars in both direct financial aid as well as indirect assistance through a variety of different technical programs and the like to be able to allow us the ability to reach into communities and ultimately eradicate this off the face of the earth. We're down to two countries, Pakistan and Afghanistan. That's it.
And those have political barriers, don't they, Harry?
They have incredible challenges from a security sense,
mm-hmm.
from a healthcare perspective, from a political perspective, from a cultural perspective,
right?
All from a geonational perspective. And so all of those challenges come together, and it's made it a particularly difficult process to get through. But if we can eradicate it off of Africa, then I'm sorry, we can find a solution to that, and we will.
We will. they're just, well, there's so much. That's why I'm doing a series of shows. There's so much to the Rotary story. I want you to talk about your legacy that you want to leave. Think about that. What do you want, Mr. District Governor, to have as a legacy for your term in office?
I want our district to be more diverse.
Okay.
I want Rotary clubs to be more diverse. I want them to be more reflective of the communities they reside within.
Mm-hmm.
I want us to focus on next generation leaders in our community, and they're everywhere. They are literally everywhere. And I know that our clubs are desperate to have these individuals come and be a part of our organization. And I think what amazing things we could get done with these individuals that are now rising up and saying, I have an idea for a solution to our society.
Mm-hmm.
And I want them to be a part of our organization so that we can learn from them and they can learn from us to find those solutions that we so desperately need. I want our district to, and I want our leaders to look back at this as the tipping point where we see the change occur from a generational perspective, that we begin to look at Rotary from a perspective of how do we entice new individuals in versus how do we continue to find a way to keep and cater to those individuals that have been with our organization for many decades. And I'm hopeful that the leaders that we have been working on and developing will rise up inside the organization and take that effort to heart and drive it forward. I also want clubs to change from being and to transform from the way they have been for the last 30 plus years into something that is far different than what they are currently, and that is more specific, more driven to a community need or a specific challenge that society has. Rotary allows for things like cause-based clubs. We have a global peace builder e-club that is just informed, that is strictly developed around issues of conflict resolution and peace. I was talking to a club just recently that was talking about issues of food security in
yes.
our area.
Yes, yes, yes.
And I said to this woman that was talking to me about it, I said, we could develop a club that was strictly based around the issue of food security mm-hmm. in our communities. And it may not be that someone is interested in coming and joining the legacy club, but instead is looking for a very specific cause that they're interested in doing. And I'm hopeful that our clubs are more nimble 5, 6, 10 years from now than they currently are. And I hope that's my legacy.
You know, Harry, but the good news about you. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. But I want to say there's one other legacy that I hope that I can kind of come away from. And that is that I personally grow from this experience myself. And I know that may seem a bit selfish, but I want to learn from these Rotarians and learn to be more accepting of different opinions than my own. I want to be more accepting of different thoughts of direction than I probably am currently. But I hope that I can grow as an individual and look back at this experience the same way that, frankly, I did when I was president of my club, as this experience made me a better me, a better father, a better husband, you know, a better member of my community. And I hope that that's another legacy that I would find.
I'm thinking if you accomplish next generation leaders attracting diversity, tipping the current environment, and particularly if you can move the cause-based clubs, number one, you can't help but grow. It's going to be a natural consequence of the transformation, and I applaud that and encourage that and pray that that can happen. I keep thinking when I talk to, I'm really into intergenerational communications, and I actually feature a series on Voices from the Future where I talk to millennials and Gen Z, et cetera. And we think that they look at us and see a divide. Just like we want them, they want us. They see us being where they want to go. And so what I think one of the things we have to do is not be afraid of the conversation with a 35-year-old or 40-year-old. You know, we have to talk about how we survived competing priorities of family and work and marriage. You know, they like those kinds of conversations. And the other thing I think you'll be successful about is these young people love service. You know, they're not so much into writing checks and being all hooty-tooty. They want to be involved. And I think we're seeing that, we've seen that recently.
And they bring families.
Yes.
For service activity.
Absolutely. You know,
my sister-in-law in north of Indianapolis, she is a Girl Scout mother. And I cannot tell you, it seems like every weekend she's doing a Girl Scout activity with her daughter, and that she's engaged. And my brother-in-law tells me all the time, he goes, yep, we're going and I'm helping to sell Girl Scout cookies this weekend at, you know, outside CVS. And she, you know, they bring their son with them for this. And it becomes a family activity that they're doing together to give something back
Absolutely.
To their community.
And that's how you have to train up a child, you know?
Exactly. And one of the things that I tell our clubs all the time, and I'm seeing our clubs do this more and more and thus more successfully, is whenever they say, well, tell me what Rotary is. And I say to them, don't answer that question as, here's what we do, here's who we are, do you want to be a part of this? Instead, ask the question, what is it that interests you?
Yeah, make
just
it a
like
testimony.
Just like those individuals did at the table that I sat at that first time I visited a Rotary Club. They were asking me, what is it that interests you? We need to hear from the 30, 35-year-olds, 40-year-olds.
We're going to.
What is it?
We're going to do that.
Interest to you.
Right.
So that we can help you accomplish those goals, because I believe Rotary can do that.
And I'm going to have to invite you to a part two, because we have 4 minutes. I'm not going to ask you any more questions because you are so enthusiastic and committed. We're going to have to do a whole nother show, okay? Can you tell?
I can do that, I suppose.
No, you can do it, period. You will do it. You've told us about your legacy. You told us about what you love. I mean, this is all wonderful. You'll have to come on. And maybe what we'll do is an intergenerational conversation with you, maybe talking to the president of our younger clubs.
I would love that.
Rotaract. And that would be just absolutely beautiful. I'm going to do one thing. Can you, in 2 minutes, give a tribute to your, well, now, maybe minute and a half, to your dad, who walked you into the service world? Can you do that fast?
I think I can.
Okay, go.
Thank you. thank you for making me the man that I am today, for showing me the way that a man is supposed to act in his family, in his community, in his business. Thank you for helping me become the father I am to my daughter and the husband I am to my wife. Thank you for teaching me that the Pittsburgh Steelers are the best football team in the world. And thank you for being the best father that you could be for me.
I love it. I love it. Everybody, this has been Harry Henderson, District Governor, Rotary 76.
Thank you, Tyra, so much for having me on.
You've been listening to Radio Fairfax, Fairfax, Virginia, on your TV, computer, or mobile device. I want to leave you with this thought. Your seat at the table is guaranteed. And you know me, I'm looking forward to next time. But until then, on that day when you don't feel like you're worthy, when you are on that last nerve about to step off, remember this: you are stronger than you feel. You are smarter than you think. You're more beautiful than you know, and more loved than you will ever imagine. You are chosen. You are important. Treat yourself like someone you love. Harry, thank you so much. Why don't you really quickly tell us, if someone wants to continue a conversation with you, how they can reach you personally?
They can give me a call on my cell phone. It's 703-927-5443. Or just reach out through RotaryDistrict7610.org. And you can find me there and find me on all of the social media circles you can find.
He's everywhere, folks.
I try to be.
I've enjoyed this. You know, this is Tyra G. And I'm listening.